AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted-use pesticide. And by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. The hog market is staying red hot. Prices are higher again this morning, and bean prices seem to be responding to the slow harvest of the 2021 bean crop in Brazil. The problem is, wheat is doing wheat things again this morning, which is holding corn down. Farm labor is back on the agenda, along with another Farmer Forum.
Live from the week's taut and toned midsection via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Representative Rick Crawford from Arkansas. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Dwayne Faber and Kevin Papp. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much, buddy. Kind of got some dark, gloomy weather here in northeast Iowa, but it's a whole lot better than snow. I think we can agree on that, right?
I think what America really wants to know is how were the dumplings?
Oh, fantastic. Huh? It was
Are you
perfect
still a little
for
groggy,
yesterday.
Perhaps?
Yeah. I am. Yeah. The coma hit me early.
I bet.
You know, it really did. It kind of knocked me out early last night.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
I'm surprised you remember.
Moderation is the key with dumplings, although easier said than done. Right. In my experience.
That's right. And it's another one of those days. Hopefully we can get some sun going, because I will admit Porterhouse is on the agenda for this evening.
Yeah. Now, I build the show as being from the week's taut and toned midsection via Farm Journal broadcast.
Have you not seen me? Do you remember what I look like, Davis?
You know, maybe the spirit of the characterization was more about the geography of the land.
Oh, the geography.
Let's go with that instead, I guess.
Exactly. I think that's probably a good choice there, sir. Thank you.
We'll start with sit-ups tomorrow. What do you say? Tomorrow we'll do the sit-ups.
That's right. They will start tomorrow. And tomorrow they'll start tomorrow.
That's right.
Oh, man, before I get too much trouble, let's get started here. What do you got in the news?
Well, Chip, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell told lawmakers Tuesday he does not expect the $1.9 trillion stimulus package will lead to unwelcome increases in inflation. He said, quote, "We might see some upward pressure on prices. Our best view is that the effect on inflation will be neither particularly large nor persistent." Now, Chip, critics of the stimulus have said it will cause a surge of consumer spending that will coincide with an improving economy to stoke consumer price increases. Powell said he does not believe a one-time spending surge that leads to temporary price increases would change his expectations. Persistent spending, I think, is what he would be referring to as something that could lead to longer-term inflation, right?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And with the With the M2 money supply that is out there, we've said this before, but the Fed is going to have to be perfect in its adjustments going forward to keep inflation from getting out of control. And I've never seen the Fed make a perfect move in managing its monetary policy. So it's going to be really tough.
Starting to sound like a Bubba Day already.
Yes, it is.
We'll get his thoughts this afternoon. USDA announced it will not finalize a plan put forth in January by the Trump administration to approve radio frequency identification tags, that's RFID tags, as the official ear tag for interstate movement of cattle, and the Animal Plant Health Inspection Services, that's APHIS, will use the rulemaking process for future actions on RFID tags. APHIS said this means that all current approved ID methods can be used until further notice. Chip, is this a big deal?
I'm not sure. I want to talk to Henderson about it. When I saw this item this morning, it's something that I want to talk to Henderson, Greg Henderson at Drovers about, and see if it is a big deal or not. But this is also a way of rolling back Trump administration plans.
Right.
When EPA or USDA announces that they will not finalize plans, what it's doing is it's rolling back those proposed rules and regulations.
And I guess the takeaway for boots on the ground, all current approved ID methods can be used until further notice.
Right.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and Chinese Minister of Ag and Rural Affairs Tang Renjian had their first conversation Monday evening. A USDA official said, quote, Secretary Vilsack raised concerns about some of China's trade barriers that disadvantage U.S. farmers. They also discussed the positive role agriculture can play in addressing climate change. And Chip, U.S. and EU will announce the revival of China dialogue at a meeting today in Brussels between the U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell. The move, first reported by the Financial Times, represents a further step toward the Biden administration's goal of creating a united response to China's rise.
I want to get Congressman Crawford's take on this as well, because as a member of the House Ag Committee, I'm sure that U.S.-Chinese and global and Chinese relations are high on his priority list. So we'll check with Representative Crawford here in a bit.
You're going to love this, Chip. China has reported a new outbreak of African swine fever in its Xinjiang region. This as statistical fraud has been uncovered in a month-long investigation of China's ag ministry last year. The Communist Party had declared complete victory over rural poverty last year and celebrated a, quote, faster-than-expected recovery of the swine herd in 2020.
Yeah, the people that are reporting this are rewarded if they are responsible for the economic growth, and if they are responsible for the recovery in that hog herd, they are rewarded. Well, of course, that's what they're reporting.
It's what I do too. Yeah,
that's right. True. That's right. All right, Davis. Thanks, buddy.
You bet.
Let's have a conversation right now with Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Chip, doing well this morning.
Good, good, good. You know, Margie, it's almost like we need a program to keep up with all the offers from ag retailers out there, don't we?
Well, you know, so what we dove into in our latest issue of The Scoop are these farmer-facing pricing programs. So they're not all rebates, right? But they are all rebate adjacent. And the suppliers, the crop protection companies, are saying they really only make major strategic changes once a year. But I tell you what, Chip, in the last 5 years, there's been a lot of changes, right? A lot of leaps and jumps in how these programs have been adjusted. And you throw on ideas such as integrating data or some of the more recent terminology around outcome-based pricing and what that could mean for how crop protection companies are going to market.
Right. And that data is really allowing it's allowing for a whole new level of innovation when it comes to some of the offers out there, right?
Well, because some companies, and I'll throw out Syngenta as one example, with their AgriClime product, they're layering on weather data and how that is helping them bring together a risk mitigation tool for farmers investing in crop protection products. So it is definitely getting more complex in some ways, but there are ways that crop protection companies are looking to provide, you know, new triggers, right, in how they're going to market and how they're pricing product with farmers.
Yeah, I mean, we're headed to offers for one, an offer that will fit an individual farm operation is looks like where we're headed to me.
Right now, all the suppliers are saying ag retail is that pivot point, and they are heavily relying on them as the trusted advisor.
Excellent. Thank you, Margie. That's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Congressman Rick Crawford up next. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is the first and only dicamba herbicide premix. In October of 2020, the EPA extended its registration for use this season and beyond in dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton. I'm joined today by Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Bobby, What are the advantages that Tavium offers compared to a solo dicamba product?
Yeah, Tavium is a combination of dicamba and S-metolachlor, so it offers two effective sites of action and one convenient premix. Unlike dicamba alone, Tavium provides both contact and long-lasting residual control of the key weeds in soybeans and cotton. Tavium controls the weeds growers can see and helps protect against the weeds that they don't see yet. Tavium allows growers the ability to fight back when managing tough weeds such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp, just to name a few.
Yeah, that's great, Bobby. We know that more sites of action is a good thing, but tell us more about the benefits of this specific combination of S-metolachlor and dicamba.
Having more effective sites of action is better because weeds are more likely to develop resistance to herbicides that contain only one effective site of action. The combination of S-metolachlor and dicamba is also what is driving the longer residual activity in Tavium. Growers are going to see 3 weeks longer residual on annual grasses and small-seeded broadleaf weeds with Tavium than what they would get from applying dicamba alone.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, explaining the advantages of Tavium compared to other dicamba herbicides. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted-use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
You know, gonna lay down my heavy load.
Preaching this one. Absolutely. That's good stuff right there. And it's also proof that we pay attention to the Twitter feed from Representative Rick Crawford from Arkansas, who joins us right now. Congressman Crawford, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing just fine, just fine. Yeah, I saw that in your Twitter feed. Sister Rosetta Tharpe, born earlier, well, her birthday was, March 20th, 1915, from?
She's from Arkansas.
Yeah, from Cotton Plant, Arkansas. I love it.
Of course, yeah.
Yep,
have you,
good
I don't know
stuff.
If you've ever been to Cotton Plant, but, you know, you've got to claim fame when you get it. And, you know, there's not a lot of famous people that came out of Cotton Plant, but this is one that we're proud of.
Absolutely. That's great. That's great stuff. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good, good. Glad that you could come back with us here. And we've got a lot of ground that we need to cover. And I want to start it right off with the Agriculture Guest Worker Reform Initiative, or AGRA Act of 2021. This is some legislation that you have reintroduced, correct?
Yes, this is something I've been working on now. I've been in Congress almost 11 years, and this is something that I've been working on since I was sworn in, because I know that this is a real problem for ag producers around the country, and, you know, my district is no different. And, you know, we can have the conversation about why U.S. ag producers are so reliant on foreign labor. But the fact remains that they are, and because they are, they need a workable system that allows for them to secure the employment they need to run their operations.
Right, right. Now, before we get into some of the details of the AGRA Act, because last week, didn't the House pass the Farm Worker Modernization Act?
They did. In fact, it passed with 30 Republicans that supported it. They were mostly from up in the Northeast. Our leadership, however, Leader McCarthy and Whip Scalise both voted against it. I think it's a good starting point, but I really think it probably, you know, exacerbates the problem, if you want to know the truth of it. There are some issues there that just don't really get to the heart of the matter in terms of streamlining and making the H-2A program more workable, more affordable. And then the other issue is this, you know, essentially we're setting up amnesty where, you know, you've got to be in the country and demonstrate having worked on the farm for, what is it, 150 days or something like that. And that would qualify you for citizenship. You know, come on. And the other thing that I think we need to start the conversation with, we need to discard the assumption that everybody that comes to the United States to work in the agriculture field is here because they want to be a citizen. That's not necessarily true.
Right.
And in many cases, they're here simply because they're trying to earn money and send back home, and they can find the employment here to do that. And so it's not necessarily about, you know, achieving citizenship. On the other hand, I think that there should be some consideration for those who work in agriculture, who choose to, after they've been here a while, you know, I want to go ahead and apply for a green card. Well, you know, your performance, you know, a good character and all that in the H-2A program should be a barometer for how you're treated with regard to application for a green card.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense. You know, this is such a complicated issue, and I think maybe I've in the past oversimplified this just by saying, you know, gosh darn it, can't we just carve the farm labor portion out of the broader immigration bill and bring it forward and get that passed and get it taken care of and move forward? Well, it looks like we can get that done, but getting it exactly right is going to take, it's a monumental effort just on farm labor, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's hard to get it right. We feel like the Agri Act comes as close to getting it right as anything we've seen thus far in terms of how we're trying to make the program affordable, trying to make it easier for employers to comply, easier for employees to comply, provide the incentives necessary on both counts to actually engage in the program, do it above board. The last thing we want to do is create a scenario, create an environment where we are forcing employers to work off the books, to hire off the books, and employees to work off the books.
Yeah.
That doesn't help us at all. In fact, it creates more problems because it denies citizens the revenue associated with the labor that every other worker has to pay. And also it creates, it's just flat out, it's illegal. So, let's just be honest about it. But there are two ways to go about this. You can get in the program, play by the rules, in which case it's extremely expensive and very difficult to comply with. You can get fined over anything, or you can work off the books. Those are the two choices that we have effectively. And we need to correct that. And we feel like the Agri Act goes in that direction. Look, we understand the H-2A program is expensive. I'll give you an example. You know, if you're paying prevailing wages, which under the Department of Labor, that's essentially what you're forced to pay. And prevailing wages should differ from one part of the country to the next. For example, if you're in eastern Arkansas, paying a prevailing union wage in Chicago, for example, probably does not necessarily comport with the wage rates in East Arkansas. But if you're forced to pay, you know, prevailing wages, that runs your costs up, number one, on labor. Number two, all the costs associated with getting that employee to your farm, and the costs associated with accommodations and other compliance issues. By the end of the year, if you pencil this out, you may have $20 an hour in that employee.
Yeah.
But you can only deduct the labor, direct compensation, the labor costs.
Yep.
So we want to see some address of that prevailing wage issue, adverse wage effect, and also bring some of the compliance costs down so that you're not spending so much money on extraneous costs that the bulk of your investment goes to actually providing wages to your employees.
Right. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. The other thing that this would that your legislation would do is move the H-2A program from the Department of Labor to USDA and the FSA office in particular. It feels like that makes a lot of common sense, because if anybody's going to know what the labor requirements are in a county, that FSA office ought to know.
Well, you make a great point. Number one is the technical knowledge associated with the work. Number two, where are these offices in rural America? The FSA offices. Right. It makes more sense to be able to administer these programs in rural America where we have an agency present, like your Farm Service Agency office. And so not only do they understand the technical nature of the work that farmers engage in, but they also are there. They're present in those communities where the Department of Labor isn't. And that makes it easier. I can't tell you the amount of casework we do on trying to address H-2A migrant workers that are stuck at the border or stuck at the airport or having visa problems. And we get frantic farmers calling us all the time going, hey, I got some guys coming from South Africa and they can't get in because of X, Y, and Z. Can you help? Or I've got some folks down at the border in Monterey. Can you help? And we do, but it would really expedite things if we had that expertise residing in the agency that really should oversee agricultural work.
That's right. Okay. Going to change gears on you here real quick, Representative Crawford. Is there an update on the delayed CFAP 3 payments coming?
I have not heard a word about it. And it's really kind of troubling because, you know, we're past the point of politics on this thing. You know, if we were going to deliver some, there was a significant amount of money out there. I will say this last round of CFAP was diluted to some degree because they expanded the folks who could participate. That's good and it's bad. But the reality was that then it was delayed for no apparent reason. And if we were trying to administer or deliver, you know, economic relief directly related to coronavirus pandemic, this was it.
Yeah.
And the reason for the delay is beyond me. And I know that there were some, you know, early on some speculation that maybe it was done to, it was a transition issue.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't up to speed on how they were going to administer that or so on. But, you know, we've definitely gone past that. I think it should be fairly easy at this point. Having administered these programs before, it should be fairly easy to do it now.
Yeah. Just a heads up, we're hearing that we could get an announcement as soon as this afternoon on it. So watch for that. Congressman, thank you so much. We certainly appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, a little bit of strength in the soy complex today. What's going on?
Well, I think we've been talking about soy oil and how it sprinted, to the upside here and made new highs and everything. Front month futures, so the May contract, they filled the gap from yesterday, and now they're starting to firm a little bit. So we did see a little bit of corrective trade in the meal oil spreads earlier on, and now the soy oil market's starting to build a buyer interest a little bit mid-morning. So that's something to keep an eye on. But as a whole, now we've got soy oil trading to the upside, meal futures aside from the far deferred contracts are trading firmer, and soybeans are higher as well. So soy complex strength this morning.
Yeah, looks like wheat's holding back corn.
It is. The wheat market's under pressure, and what we had seen in wheat and corn is that they were pretty much trading in lockstep, but the wheat market has really softened over the past week or so here in relation to the corn market. But today's price action, the wheat is lower and corn is trending to the downside because of that.
All right. Let's take us over to the livestock market. This hog market is, it's hard to, you don't want to stand in the way of it right now, do you?
Absolutely not. And, you know, continue to see strength in the pork cutout, the cash hog market, and that's leading the front end of the market higher. We are seeing a little bit of pressure on the back end of the market, but that's in the extreme far deferred contracts, and really just the trend is sharply higher at this point in time. Cattle market, we saw a lack of buyer interest early on. There wasn't much seller interest. But we've seen buyer interest start to build, so maybe we'll see some strength in the cash market. I think that that's really what the traders want to see at this point in time.
I think you're exactly right. Good stuff, Brian. Thanks, buddy. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
And the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovative Center for U.S. Dairy, National Corn Growers Association, National Pork Board, and Sanderson Farms are some of the sponsors of ACAM. Learn more at www.agweb.com/ACAM. Let's get this Farmer Forum going. Kevin Papp from Minnesota. How are you, Kevin? Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great day in Minnesota, a little wet, but we're one day closer to spring.
Yeah, absolutely we are. Kevin, let's bring Dwayne Faber from Washington into the conversation as well. Dwayne, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Chip. Doing well. Out in the rain here, too, supporting Ducks Unlimited. So it's a good day.
Good for you. Good for you. Kevin, we got to start with you and a little bit of the news that you made, I always say that it's better to report the news than to be the news, but in this case, you are some of this news, and that you made the announcement earlier this month that you're not going to seek re-election for the Minnesota Farm Bureau president. You've been president for what now, 15, 16 years?
I'll be finishing up my 16th year as president, yes.
Well, it's congratulations all around on that. It sounds to me like you're going to be dearly missed at the Minnesota Farm Bureau as president, though.
Well, we've got a strong team, both in volunteer leaders, a great staff. They'll do just fine. And I was recently elected county commissioner, so I'm going to spend some time working on ag and rural issues and those kinds of things as a county commissioner.
Gotcha. And for those of you that don't know, Kevin's in Blue Earth County, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge agriculture. I mean, all counties in Minnesota are basically all counties in Minnesota are huge agriculture counties. But Blue Earth, come on, with all the vegetables and the corn, the soybeans, the hogs, it's kind of an agricultural powerhouse there in Minnesota, isn't it?
Well, we're very fortunate. Each and every day, I thank my grandfathers and forefathers for stopping in a really good part of Minnesota that allows us to have good weather and good soil.
Yep. Yep. There's all kinds of black topsoil there in Blue Earth County, Dwayne. I don't know if you get to deal with that out there or not. What is your soil types like out in Washington?
Yeah, we have a lot of river silt, sandy loam, and it's interesting. I'm watching Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie, with the family and the kids, and they talk about Blue Earth, Minnesota. And so it's exciting to hear that that's an actual place. So that's pretty cool.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Dwayne, I want to, before we get to, you know what, let's go ahead and start with some of these farm labor issues that we were just talking about with Representative Rick Crawford from Arkansas. And Dwayne, I'll start with you. I made the comment to Mr. Crawford that In the past, I feel like maybe I've oversimplified this carving out the farm labor issue from the broader immigration and bringing it forward, and that it is, even doing that, it is still an exceptionally complicated topic and issue to get right, isn't it?
It certainly is. And, I mean, you look at from the macro level, I mean, what some of the challenges that even a country like China is going to face is they're going to have labor shortages. As they have fewer and fewer kids, the one-child policy opened up, but they're still not having the workforce and the kids to come in to replace the older folks. And here in the U.S., we in a lot of ways have to view Mexico and people that want to come to our country as a bit of an asset going forward. We've got shortages of labor everywhere. I mean, even in the housing market, our ability to build houses is being hampered by skilled labor. And in the farming community, there's more and more stories of shortages in the farming community and in agriculture. And having a source of labor is an asset, and we should view it as that. And we need to come forward with a program that works for every industry and brings every industry to the table. I mean, the first couple iterations of the immigration program, I believe that they had to go back for 6 months. They could be here for 6 months, and then they had to go back to their country of origin for 6 months. And that works well if you are in a you know, fruit crop where they need them for 6 months and then they can go back. For us in dairy, we have worked 365 days a year, and so this new iteration which allows them to come for 10 months and then 1 month back in their home country. I think that is a nod to dairy, and we appreciate that in the dairy industry. We want to be above board, and quite frankly, for an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid that can come to America and, you know, work for 3 years, build up some savings, and then go back to his country, that individual is set for life just about. They can have a paid-off house going back to Mexico, right, just with the currency exchange. And so it's a win for both parties.
That's fantastic perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a win for both parties, and we need to come up with a solution that works for everybody.
That's fantastic perspective. Kevin, this farm labor issue is something that the American Farm Bureau Federation has been dealing with for a long time. Do you feel the momentum, Kevin? Do you feel like this is something is going to get done this time on farm labor?
Well, you know, you brought it up again, and I'm glad you did. This is a complicated issue. It's not only complicated, it's an emotional issue. It's not an easy issue. I mean, that's why the last reform, you know, back in 1986, that's been a while. I think it really kind of boils down to two facts and one question. I mean, we've got to realize the facts are the facts. We've got immigrant farm workers that play a vital role in feeding all Americans, and it's pretty much a fact. We've got a current, qualified, hardworking, experienced, and unauthorized workforce, and I think we have to ask ourselves the question, do we want to import our labor or import our food?
Hmm. Well, I'll go ahead and answer that. I think for most people, I would rather import the labor than import the food. Isn't that the stand of the Farm Bureau?
Absolutely. You know, anytime we can add value, whether we're adding value in this country, whether we're adding value through animal agriculture like dairy, or adding value through renewable fuels with ethanol and biodiesel, you know, not only is it good for that farming family, but it's also good for that rural community. So we're going to continue to be at the table. We really appreciate Congressman Crawford's efforts to put forth his ideas for reform, because we've got to continue to have those conversations as we pivot to the Senate.
Yep. Okay. You know, there was the modernization, the Farm Worker Modernization Act, Dwayne, that passed too. It was led by Representative Dan Newhouse, who we had on the show here a couple of weeks ago to talk about that bill. You want to talk about a bill that favored the dairies? That Modernization Act was definitely pointed at the dairy labor, right?
Yeah, it certainly was. And Dan Newhouse from Eastern Washington, we're in the midst of it right now. There was a lawsuit recently, you know, where there was a farm that wasn't paying or wasn't documenting pay for mealtime breaks and overtime. And so Washington, we now have a mandatory or we have an exemption of the overtime, and anything over 40 hours now we're paying time and a half. And that's, that spurned a lot of it. And one of the opinions of the judges was he felt like there could be a 3-year look back and employees could sue for 3 years of back wages on overtime. And even for me, it would have been $1 million-plus bill because you managed with the rules that were given to you at the time. Right. And so Dan Newhouse did a great job kind of addressing that, and the work of the Dairy Federation here in Washington State. We legislatively have been able to go around it and get that scratched out, fortunately, because it would have been a death knell to a lot of dairy farmers out here. And
wow. It
just speaks to some of the ludicrousness of the court system that we have to fight. And again, most dairy farmers here, we're not opposed to paying overtime. The retroactive part of it, it's a little bit like changing the speed limit after you've gone down the road and then issuing a ticket, right? It's just unprecedented, and that's kind of the environment that we're in. So we really appreciate Dan Newhouse's work on all of that.
Good stuff. Give us an update on what's going on with the dairy industry up there in the PNW, Duane. Everything moving along, chugging along? Is there some profit potential out there?
Yeah, you bet. I mean, it's so the Class 3 market, I mean, again, it's much stronger than the Class 4 market. The Class 4 market has kind of been the redheaded stepchild of the milk market here, with butter and powder lagging the cheese market. And one of the issues we're facing here in the PNW is just shipping, export. We're an export company. The vast majority of our powder goes overseas, and with the buying of all the American consumers, a lot of these shipping companies find it more profitable to dump off their load of goods that they bring to the U.S. and then turn right around empty and head back to particularly China to load back up and come back here again. And so they're not even taking the time to load up the dairy exports. And actually, it's not just dairy. It's fruit and vegetables. It's alfalfa. It's several commodities that are expressing their frustration in this. And we just can't seem to get our goods overseas. And so there's work to try and remediate that, but that has certainly been the challenge here going forward. So
that is astonishing.
And we're starting to turn around. Mm-hmm.
Trucker's not going to book a job unless he's got a backhaul in most cases, and we're talking about boats, vessels, not booking the backhaul before they make the trip. That is astonishing to me, man. Oh man. Okay. I want to talk some more about that, Duane, when we come back, and trade in general, Kevin. Because we've got USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack talking with his Chinese counterpart. Looks like there's a certain level of understanding going on between those two right now. We'll get Kevin and Duane's take on what that might mean for U.S. ag exports ahead.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing in nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's a farmer forum sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Some additional sponsors of ACAM: Simpass, the Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum Checkoff Program, Valent USA, Farm Journal Foundation, and Trust in Food, which, of course, is a Farm Journal initiative. And it is done with the financial and technical support of USDA's NRCS. www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more. We got a Farmer Forum going. Kevin Papp from Minnesota, Duane Faber from Washington with us today. Duane is a dairy producer there in Washington State. Now, Duane, I don't know where that came from. I've got it in a note from something else. No, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and his Chinese counterpart had their first official meeting on Monday. It was done virtually. And trade, of course, is one of the top things that they're talking about. How much anxiety do you feel about this trade issue and dairy trade issue with China? How important is it to the future of PNW dairy?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I mean, we went from about 4 or 5% export on dairy products to about 20%, and right now we're the cheapest dairy products in the world as far as as far as butter, powder, skim milk powder. And so it's frustrating that right now we just can't get it out there. And Secretary Vilsack did an excellent job at U.S. DEC for the dairy industry, representing the dairy industry. And he had gone on a trade talk to China and encouraged them to feed more whey. And just a flip of the switch, they did. They implemented more whey in their rations for feeding the pigs as they were trying to increase the pig population. And so he has his finger on the pulse of the Chinese needs better than anybody else. And so, quite frankly, it's exciting for us in the dairy industry that he is in that position. And our hope is that he does represent the dairy industry well in that position. But I think he understands trade, particularly trade to China, better than most do. And I believe he's a real asset. And the hope is that he's able to open those inroads and keep those inroads going and moving. And some of the barriers then would be the dollar, right? It certainly helps have a little bit lower dollar. And But we're optimistic going forward that continues.
Right. Great, Duane. Kevin, what's your level of optimism when it comes to trade with China? Because under the Trump administration, it was front burner stuff all the time. It feels like it's moved a little bit to the back burner. Is that the right take?
Well, we sure hope not. I mean, we all know that exports are critical economic drivers in agriculture, and we've all got to work to defend, restore, expand the trade opportunities, and with everybody. It's important that we're at the table with everybody. So we're going to be continually pushing that. In fact, here just a little over an hour, we'll have all 50 Farm Bureau state presidents on a phone call with Secretary Vilsack, and you can be sure that trade will be one of those things that is going to be on the top of our list.
Awesome. I'll bet you're going to get an update on the CFAP 3 payments too, aren't you, Kevin?
It's certainly sounding like we're going to have an announcement this afternoon. That's a good thing. Appreciate that. But we've got to continue to work on this trade. And it's so important that we do that. It's already been mentioned that poor man ties the value of the dollar. You know, that's making our commodities more expensive for others to buy as well.
Right. All right, I got to switch gears in the last couple of minutes here. Kevin, what's the conversation around the breakfast table up there with your group? Any late season decisions to make yet before you start putting seed in the ground?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to start keeping track. But by far, the number one question around the breakfast table is, when is Chip Foley coming back to town to do that again? That's our number one question for you.
Right.
So, we always want that. I think it's just looking at spring weather, input prices. I mean, everything is sticker shock, almost everything we deal with.
Yeah, no doubt. Duane, what about you? What's the priority list look like right now for you?
Yeah, certainly input costs for us as well, right? I mean, with the skyrocketing of the corn and soybean complex, it's been a challenge, right? And the milk prices haven't quite come up to a point to reflect that yet. And so it's going to be interesting going forward. At what point do we start having milk contraction as individuals start beefing out animals that just don't pencil, you know, putting $5 corn through them? And it's kind of interesting. I mean, my inputs that I've locked up with canola and soybean meal and corn is more profitable for me to sell it on the open market than actually turn it into milk right now. And that just speaks to the disparity that we're at right now. At some point, that's going to change. But we're in a period of inflection and constriction. So it's going to be an interesting next couple, 6 months here and see where it goes going forward.
You know, when we start reallocating those inputs, like you're talking about, Duane, when the market starts reallocating those inputs and feed in particular from one sector of the industry to another sector of the industry, it kind of typically is signaling that prices have probably gone far enough to the upside, at least for now, based on the fundamentals that we've got. So who knows? We'll have to pay real close attention to that. Real quick, Kevin, Michael Regan is going to be addressing the AgriPulse. He's the new administrator at EPA. He's going to be talking with AgriPulse people here real quick. What do you hope to hear from him?
We certainly have to move forward on the RFS and continue to do that. That's probably our biggest concern. We've already talked about value for agriculture and we want to do that and got some concerns with EPA extending the compliance deadline.
Right, right. Very good. You guys, I can't imagine having two more knowledgeable people on this show to talk about some of these farm labor issues than what we had today with Dwayne Faber from Washington State and Kevin Papp from Minnesota. You guys were fantastic. Thank you so much for all your input, Dwayne.
Thank you, Chip. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Look forward to having you on again here soon. Kevin, hey, man, good luck to you with that county supervisor position up there.
Well, thank you. Everybody stay safe and have a safe spring.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin. That's Kevin Papp from Minnesota. Come back this afternoon. Got a great show lined up for you. Mike Mock from Mike Mock Consulting is going to put some perspective on the price action and the market action that we've seen, get us ready for grain stocks, prospective plantings report. And tomorrow morning, we got Iowa State Representative Chad Ingles right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.